Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the serialized audiobook, Ancestor, written by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, performed by the author. Ancestor is also available in print, ebook, and unabridged audiobook. For links to purchase any version, visit scottsigler.com/ancestor.
November 7th, Tasmanian Wolves. Colding walked out of the main building's airlock and into the morning cold. Even after many months, he couldn't get used to these temperatures. He ran the awkward run of someone trying to stay tucked inside his coat, quickly covering the 50 yards to the hangar. The hangar looked completely out of place in the snowy, barren landscape. 7 stories high at the peak, 150 yards long, 100 yards wide. 2 huge sliding front doors allowed for a plane that would never really come, which was why the hangar doubled as the barn for the cows and tripled as the garage for the facility's 2 vehicles. At the base of the left-hand sliding door was a normal, man-sized entrance. Colding Waddle ran to it and slipped inside. Inside, heat. Thank the powers that be. He walked to one of the heaters and pressed the higher button again and again, cranking it up to full. He heard natural gas hissing through the PVC pipe as he stripped off his gloves and held his hands in front of the grate. The security room computer controlled this heater and the 50 or 60 just like it that were spaced along the ground and up on the ceiling, but the temporary override was like heaven.
"Oh, come on," a high-pitched voice called out. "You're turning up the heat? It's frickin' toasty in here."
"That's because you're a mutant from Canada," Colding called over his shoulder. "You were probably born in an igloo." He jerked his hands back as the heat nearly burned him. There, that was better. Colding put his gloves back on, trapping the heat radiating off his warm skin. He turned, saw the thick-bodied Brady Giovanni start up the diesel engine of the small tanker truck they used to refuel Bobby Valentine's helicopter. The hangar wasn't exactly toasty, as Brady had said, but it was well above freezing. The 70,000-square-foot building held 50 Holstein cows at the far end. They were over 60 yards away, a testament to the building's size. The big black-and-white animals chewed on feed. Occasionally, one of them let out a moo that echoed off the hangar sheet metal roof some 7 stories above. On this end of the hangar sat the fuel truck and a Humvee. The Hummer saw very little use, other than weekly eyeball checks of the off-site data backup, which sat at the end of the facility's 1-mile-long landing strip, and for taking Erica Hole to weekly checkups of Baffin Island's 2 backup herd facilities. Each facility was a miserable 30 miles away. A 60-mile round trip with Hole was about as much fun as a barbed wire enema. Brady eased out of the fuel truck, leaving the engine to idle.
"All set for Bobby," he said. "I'll start refueling his chopper as soon as he lands." "It's cold as hell outside this morning," Colding said. "After you open the doors, make sure you adjust the heat so the cows don't get chilled."
"Sure thing. I'll crank the heat for him. You might say it'll be a hot time in the old town this morning."
Brady laughed at his own joke, as usual, leaving Colding to smile and nod vaguely as he politely tried to grasp the humor. Brady's laugh sounded much like his voice, high-pitched, more at home in the body of a 15-year-old girl than a 6'4", 300-pound man. As a security guard, Brady cut an imposing figure. No one understood his jokes, not even Gunther or Andy Crosswaite, who had both served with the man in the Canadian Special Forces. Speaking of Andy, Colding checked his watch. A little past 10:30 a.m. Imagine that. Andy, the asshole Crosswaite, was late.
"Brady, you heard from Andy?"
Brady shook his head.
"Shit. Well, he'll be out here soon to help you with refueling. I'm going to step outside for a second.
hold down the fort. Brady laughed his high-pitched laugh.
Hold down the fort! That's good!
Colding smiled, nodded. Hard enough not getting Brady's jokes. Now, apparently, he didn't get his own. He walked out of the hangar's small personnel door and back into the sub-zero morning's blazing white. His feet scrunched the facility's packed snow as he walked away from the hangar until they sank calf-deep into undisturbed drifts. He stood alone, staring out at the white expanse of Baffin Island. With his back to the lab, there wasn't a building in sight.
3 years.
Fuck sleeping. He should be drunk. Maybe he'd hang with Tim Feely after the morning's experiment. Tim was always down for a drink and always seemed to have a bottle close at hand.
3 years. I just wish I had you back, Colding muttered.
But Clarissa couldn't come back, no matter how bad he wished for it. He couldn't blunt the pain permanently lodged in his chest. What he could do, though, was make this goddamn project work. And by doing so, spare hundreds of thousands of people from experiencing pain just like his. He turned back to look at the compound, his home for almost 2 years. About 50 yards southwest of the hangar stood the compound's other building. The square, cinder-block facility only looked simple. Its two entry points were airlocks that maintained a slight negative pressure. It was a sobering thought. Colding's home was a place designed to keep death in. The building contained state-of-the-art labs for genetics, computers, and veterinary medicine, as well as a small cafeteria, rec room, and 9 600-square-foot apartments. It was a good-sized facility, but after 20 isolated months, even the Trump Tower would seem claustrophobic. Between the hangar and the main facility stood a metal platform that supported a 10-foot satellite dish. The platform, the hangar, and the facility were the sum total of civilization at Janetta's Baffin Island base. A distant, rapid growl of rotor blades echoed off the landscape. Colding turned to see a dark speck on the horizon. The speck quickly grew into the familiar image of a Sikorsky S-76C helicopter. Colding loved the sight of that machine. If you took a typical TV news chopper, removed all the logos, and painted it flat black, you'd have a twin to Bobby's Sikorsky. With 12 seats and a range of over 400 nautical miles, the Sikorsky could get the entire staff to safety in case of an emergency. The heli closed in, then swooped down to the mile-long landing strip like a noisy shadow, kicking up clouds of powdery snow. The landing gear extended. Bobby Valentine set her down gently. After a short pause, a metallic rattling sound echoed across the snowy landscape. The hangar's massive doors, 240 feet wide and 70 feet high, split in the middle and slowly opened just enough for the fuel truck. Brady drove it out and stopped close to the Sikorsky. Colding walked toward the helicopter, watching the hangar doors to see if they would close. They stayed open, which meant, obviously, that Andy Crosswaite was not in the hangar to shut them. The main building's front airlock opened. Colding expected to see Andy, but instead, Gunther Jones trotted out into the cold. At 6'2", Gunther stood eye to eye with Colding, but was much skinnier, his black Janata jacket always drooping from his rail-thin frame like a loose shirt on a wire hanger.
Gun, where the hell is the asshole?
Asleep. I didn't want to leave you guys shorthanded.
He handed Colding a walkie-talkie.
That's punched into Andy's room vidphone.
Colding sighed and pressed the transmit button.
Andy, pick up.
No answer.
Andy, come in. I'll keep squawking until you answer.
The handset crackled back.
Do you mind? I'm trying to sleep.
Get your ass out here, Andy. Gunther's supposed to be off duty.
Is Gun there?
Yes, he came out to cover for your lazy ass.
Then it's a reach-around happy ending for all. Leave me alone, Colding.
Damn it, Andy. Come out here and do your job.
I'll pass. My GAF level's pretty low right now.
GAF? Colding looked at Gunther.
His give-a-fuck level, Gunther said.
Colding considered Andy only slightly more useful than a day-old dog turd. He'd served with Magnus, which was the only reason the dangerous little bastard had a job at all.
Andy, I'm... Uh-oh, Andy said. I think this thing is broken.
A click, and with it, the conversation was over. Colding didn't bother hitting the transmit button.
Don't sweat it, Gunther said. I don't mind. Let me say hi to Bobby and I'll close up the hangar. Crank the heat. Cool?
Colding nodded. The two men reached the Sikorsky as the rotor blades started their slow spin down, and Bobby Valentine hopped out. Bobby was the Paglione's private pilot and all-around errand boy. He pushed his heavy, brownish-blonde hair away from his eyes and flashed the smile that seemed to get him laid everywhere he went. He carried a lunchbox-sized metal case in his left hand. His right, he offered to Colding, who shook it firmly.
PJ, how are you?
I'm just fine, Bobby V, Colding said. Okay, flight?
Bobby nodded.
It was fine, as the return trip will be if I get out of here before that low-pressure system comes in.
Bobby reached out to shake Gunther's hand.
Gun, my man, how's the writing coming?
Good, real good. I am almost finished with the third book. Stephanie Meyer won't know what hit her.
Go get him, Tiger, Bobby said.
Gunther nodded, then jogged to the hangar. He ran by Brady, who was dragging a fuel hose to the Sikorsky. Bobby gently lifted the metal case like it was a fragile heirloom and handed it to Colding.
Right there is a regular who's who of extinction, Bobby said. Caribbean monk seal, stellar sea cow, pig-footed bandicoot, and a Tasmanian wolf.
A Tasmanian wolf? Those have been gone since the 30s. Bobby nodded.
We found a stuffed one in Auckland. Got some DNA out of the fur or something.
Okay, package delivered. So let's get me turned around and out of here.
That soon?
Doc Roomcorp was dying to go flying with you.
Bobby checked his watch.
Can Herr Doctor do it right now?
He's in the middle of an embryonic immune reaction experiment.
Sorry, I can't wait, Bobby said. Besides, Doc Roomcorp doesn't really need any more lessons. I'll take him out next time.
Colding checked his watch. 10:50 a.m. Roomcorp and company had been at it for 3 hours now and would soon finish. Colding hurried inside, leaving Brady and Gunther to get Bobby turned around quickly. Hopefully this time, unlike the last 15 embryonic runs, Colding would be able to report to Dante with some good news.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
November 7th. She's got balls. The tiny, floating ball of cells could not think, could not react. It could not feel. If it could, it would have felt only one thing. Fear. Fear at the monster floating close by. Amorphous, insidious, unrelenting, the monster reached out with flowing tendrils that touched the ball of cells, tasting the surface. The floating ball vibrated a little each time one of its cells completed mitosis, splitting from one cell into two daughter cells. And that happened rapidly. More rapidly than in any other animal, any other life form. Nothing divided this fast, this efficiently. So fast, the living balls vibrated every 3 or 4 minutes, cells splitting, doubling their number over and over again. The floating balls had begun as a cow's single-celled egg. Now, only the outer membrane could truly be called bovine. The interior contained a unique genome that was mostly something else. The amorphous monster? A macrophage, a white blood cell, a hunter-killer taken from that same cow's blood and dropped into a petri dish with the hybrid egg. The monster's tendrils reached out, boneless, shapeless, flowing like intelligent water. They caressed the rapidly dividing egg, sensing chemicals, tasting the egg for one purpose only. To see if the egg was self. It was not. The egg was other. And anything other had to be destroyed. Jian knew, even at this early stage, that failure had come calling once again. She, Klaus Ruhmkorff, Erica Hohl, and Tim Feely watched the giant monitor that took up an entire wall of the equipment-packed genetics lab. The monitor's upper right-hand corner showed green numbers, 72 out of 150. The rest of the huge screen showed a grid of squares, 10 high, 15 across. Over half of those squares were black. The remaining squares each showed a grainy gray picture of a highly magnified embryo. The 150 denoted the number of embryos alive when the experiment began. 50 cows, 3 genetically modified eggs from each cow, each egg tricked into replicating without fertilization. As soon as a fertilized egg, called a zygote, split into 2 daughter cells, it became an embryo, a growing organism. Each embryo sat in a petri dish, filled with a nutrient-rich solution and immune system elements from the same cow, macrophages, natural killer cells, and T lymphocytes, elements that combine to work as the body's own special ops assassins targeted at viruses, bacteria, and other harmful pathogens. The 72 represented the number of embryos still alive, not yet destroyed by the voracious white blood cells. Jian watched the counter change to 68 out of 150. Ruhmkorff seemed to vibrate with anger, the frequency of that vibration increasing ever so slightly each time the number dropped. He was only a hair taller than Jian, but she outweighed him by at least 100 pounds. His eyes looked wide and bug-like behind thick, black-framed glasses. The madder he became, the more he shook. The more he shook, the more his comb-over came apart, exposing his shiny, balding pate. 65 out of 150.
"This is ridiculous," Erica said, her cultured Dutch accent dripping with disgust.
Jian glared at the demure woman. She hated Hohl, not only because she was a complete bitch, but also because she was so pretty and feminine, all the things that Jian was not. Hohl wore her silvery gray hair in a tight bun that revealed a haughty face. She had the inevitable wrinkles due any 45-year-old woman, but nothing that even resembled a laugh line. Hohl looked so pale that Jian often wondered if the woman had seen anything but the inside of a sunless lab for the last 30 years. 61 out of 150.
"Time?"
Ruhmkorff asked. Jian, Tim, and Erica automatically looked at their watches, but the question was meant for Erica.
21 minutes, 10 seconds, she said.
"Remove the failures from the screen," Ruhmkorff said through clenched teeth.
Tim Feely quietly typed in a few keystrokes. The black squares disappeared.
61 squares, now much larger, remained. Tim was Jan's assistant, a biologist with impressive bioinformatics skills. He wasn't on Jan's level, of course, but his multidisciplinary approach bridged the gap between Jan's computer skills and Erica's biological expertise. He was bigger than Ruhmkorff, but not by much. Jan hated the fact that even though the project had two men and two women, she was always the largest person in the room. Jan focused on one of the squares. The tiny embryo sat helpless, a gray, translucent cluster of cells defined by a whitish circle. At 16 cells, the terminology changed from embryo to morula, Latin for mulberry, so named for its resemblance to the fruit. It normally took a mammalian embryo a few days to reach the morula stage. Jan's creatures reached this stage in just 20 minutes. Left alone, the morula would continue to divide until it became a hollow ball of cells known as a blastocyst. But to keep growing, a blastocyst had to embed itself into the lining of a mother's uterus. And that could never happen as long as the cow's immune system treated the embryo like a harmful foreign body. 54 out of 150. Jan focused on a single square. From the morula's left, a macrophage began oozing into view, moving like an amoeba, extending pseudopodia as it slid and reached. All along the wall-sized monitor, the white squares steadily blinked their way to blackness. 48 out of 150.
"Damn it!"
Ruhmkorff hissed, and Jan wondered how he could speak so clearly with his teeth pressed together like that. The macrophage operated on chemicals, grabbing molecules from the environment and reacting to them. The morula's outer membrane, the zona pellucida, was the same egg membrane taken from the cow. That meant it was 100% natural, native to the cow, something macrophages would almost never attack. But what lay inside that outer shell was something created by Jan. Jan and her God machine. 34 out of 150.
"Clears them out again," Ruhmkorff said.
Tim tapped the keys. The black squares again disappeared. The remaining grayish squares grew even larger. Instantly, the larger squares started blinking to black. 24 out of 150. "Fuck," Erica said in a decidedly uncultured tone. Inside the morula, a cell quivered. Its sides pinched in, the shape changing from a circle to an hourglass. Mitosis. A macrophage tendril reached the morula, touched it, almost caressing it. 14 out of 150. The macrophage's entire amorphous body slid into view, a grayish, shapeless mass. 9 out of 150. The squares steadily blinked out, their blackness mocking Jan, reminding her of her lack of skill, her stupidity, her failure. 4 out of 150. The macrophage moved closer to the morula. The dividing cell quivered once more, and the single cell became two. Growth. Success. But it was too late. 1 out of 150. The macrophage's tendrils encircled the ball, then touched on the other side, surrounding it. The tendrils joined, engulfing the prey. The square turned black, leaving only a white line grid and a green number. 0 out of 150.
"Well, that was just spectacular," Ruhmkorff said. "Absolutely spectacular."
"Oh, please," Erica said. "I really don't want to hear it."
Ruhmkorff turned to face her.
"You're going to hear it. We have to produce results. For heaven's sakes, Erica, you've built your whole career on this process."
"That was different. The quagga and the zebra are almost genetically identical. This thing we're creating is artificial, Klaus. If Jan can't produce a proper genome, the experiment is flawed to begin with."
Jan wanted to find a place to hide. Ruhmkorff and Erica had been lovers once, but no more. Now they fought like a divorced couple. Erica jerked her thumb at Jan.
"It's her fault. All she can do is give me an embryo with a 65% success probability. I need at least 90% to have any chance.
You're both responsible, Ruhmkorff said. We're missing something here. Specific proteins are producing the signals that triggers the immune response. You have to figure out which genes are producing the offending proteins.
We've looked, Erica said. We've gone over it again and again. The computer keeps analyzing. We keep making changes, but the same thing happens every time.
Ruhmkorff slowly ran a hand over his head, putting his comb over mostly back in place.
We're too close to it. We've got to change our way of thinking. I know the fatal flaw is staring us in the face. We just don't recognize it.
Tim stood up and stretched. He ran both hands through his short but thick blonde locks, looking directly at Ruhmkorff when he did. John wondered if Tim did that on purpose, to mock Ruhmkorff's thinning hair.
We've been over this 100 times, Tim said. I'm already reviewing all of Jeanne and Erica's work on top of doing my own.
Erica let out a huff.
As if you could even understand my work, you idiot.
You shut up, Jeanne said. You do not talk to Tim like that.
Erica smirked, first at Jeanne, then at Tim.
Such a big man, Tim. You need a fat old woman to fight your battles for you.
Tim's body stayed perfectly still except for his right hand, which extended and flipped Erica the middle finger.
That will be enough, Mr. Feely, Ruhmkorff said. If you're not smart enough to contribute to the work, the least you can do is shut your mouth and focus your worthless brain on running your little computer.
Tim's hands clenched into fists. John felt so bad for him. All his life, Tim Feely had probably been used to being the smartest person in the room. Here, he was the dumbest, something Klaus never let him forget.
I realize we're all frustrated, Ruhmkorff said, but we have to find a way to think in new directions. We're so close. Can't you all feel it?
His bug-eyed glare swept around the room, eliciting delayed nods of agreement from all of them. They were close, maddeningly so. Jeanne just couldn't find that missing piece. It almost made her long for the days before the medicine, when the ideas came freer, faster. But no, that wouldn't do. She knew all too well where that led. Ruhmkorff took off his glasses and rubbed his eyes.
I want you all to think about something.
He put the glasses back on.
It took us an hour to conduct this experiment. In that hour, at least 4 people died from organ failure. 4 people. Who would have lived if they had a replacement. In 24 hours, almost 100 people will die. Perhaps you should consider that before you start bickering again.
Jeanne, Tim, and even Erica stared at the floor.
Whatever it takes, Ruhmkorff said. Whatever it takes, we will make this happen. We've just failed the immune response test for the 16th time. All of you, go work from your rooms. Maybe if we stop sniping at each other, we can find that last obstacle and eliminate it.
Jeanne nodded, then walked out of the lab and headed back to her small apartment. 16 immune response tests. 16 failures. She had to find a way to make number 17 work. Had to, because millions of lives depended on her and her alone.
You have been listening to Ancestor by Scott Sigler. Performed by the author. Produced by Empty Set Entertainment.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.